I'm Steve Kraske of the Kansas City Star, and this is Up to Date. Well, here it is, the season of peace and goodwill toward men and women, and what do we have? Tech wars. It's a reader rumble, a tablet tussle, a social network skirmish, and the techsperts are here to referee. We'll sort out the combatants and give you the odds of who will come out on top. Plus, from the end of paying with cash to simulated actors, we'll look at some of the prognostications for the next 100 years of computing. And just in time for the holidays, some gift ideas sure to please the pickiest geek. It's Up to Date, following this hour's news. Welcome to Up to Date. I'm Steve Kraske. In the social networking wars, it's Google versus Facebook. In the tablet wars, it's the Kindle Fire or the iPad. In the TV wars, it's Apple against the rest of the world. Yep, there's a whole lot of high-tech infighting going on these days as the world moves towards the holiday season. Today, we'll get updates on all these high-tech goings-on from our techsperts, and they are Dustin Jacobson, who's Vice President of Social Media and Technology at Barclay. And Dustin, good morning.
Good morning.
Happy holidays to you. Justin Parlett is the Support Systems Administrator at the University of Missouri, Kansas City. Justin, good morning to you, too.
Hello.
Nice to have you. Well, it's the grudge match of the century, gentlemen, Facebook versus Google. It's being played out right now. Where do things stand as we sit here today, Dustin?
Well, Google Plus, was rolled out to general consumers a while ago,
yeah.
And just recently they rolled it out to businesses. So now any organization can actually create their own page. We had a great discussion at our social media club. A lot of people don't know, but within Kansas City, we actually have one of the largest social media
clubs. There's a social media club in Kansas
City?
There is. And
there
you
is.
Do what?
Well, we talk about social things.
Yes.
And we had a great discussion last Friday, actually, about Google Plus versus Facebook. And it wasn't so much that they're mutually exclusive. The challenge is, everyone has limited resources, limited time. Where do you place your bets?
Right.
And it was a great discussion because we had, two people on each side of the fence, two people that were representing Facebook, and when I say representing, basically defending, and two people were representing or defending Google. And it was a great discussion because they both have advantages and they both have challenges. The biggest thing for Facebook is they have, approaching 1 billion people. So they have the user audience. The biggest advantage for Google is it's Google. They're a public company worth billions and they have a huge user base. They also pretty much own search. And Facebook doesn't. Facebook does not own search. And most people, when they're looking for something, they go to Google. So they have, 75% or so market share when it comes to that. So it was a great discussion. There's advantages, disadvantages of each one.
Talk to me about that a little
bit.
What are the advantages and disadvantages of each? Because I'm still in the dark. I've gotten a few invitations to hook on with somebody to Google Plus, and I just haven't gone there yet.
So the way that I look at Google Plus is that right now it's still kind of your first movers for sure. Google has said that there's over 40 million accounts that have been activated. That doesn't mean that they are active. So I want to make kind of that differentiation. What people are using it for is very similar to Facebook. So people are trying to figure out, if I'm going to post a picture, where do I post it? Do I post it, through some kind of a, TwitPic or some kind of service, Instagram, and I share it on Twitter? Do I share that content out to Facebook where my friends already are? Do I share it to Google Plus? Do I put it on a Tumblr blog? Where do I put it? And that's now really starting to overwhelm the general consumer on where do I put all this content that I'm creating. So what Google Plus allows you to do, it's very similar to Facebook. You can create your own kind of profile page. You can post content. You can post video. Google's done a good job of integrating their other services like YouTube and the such into that. So they try to make it kind of a one-stop shop for all of the Google services. Mm-hmm. Gmail is very well integrated. Google Search is very well integrated. And the biggest advantage for Google is that it will impact your search. So if one of my friends shares something or instead of like on Facebook, Google has this plus one kind of terminology. If you like something on Google Plus, so to speak, then that is higher up in your search results. So if I'm connected with you on Google Plus and you share an article or like something, then that'll show up higher in my search results when I'm searching for something similar. So Google really hasn't announced how all that's going to play out. But because they own so much of search, they're going to use all that data that they have about you to make search more relevant.
Well, Justin, which one do you prefer?
Well, actually, right now, for me personally, I'm still on Facebook. Mm-hmm. I have a Google Plus account, but several of my friends made the joke around Halloween that they wanted to visit a graveyard, so they logged into their Google Plus account. because there still is not a tremendous amount of activity on it. Like Dustin said, right now it's still a lot of the early adopters. So it's people who are really heavily plugged into social networks, people who are concerned with the fact that, hey, this article that I looked for will show up higher in search results. You know, for the average consumer, they're not really going to be that concerned about whether or not a particular article that they're interested in or that they wrote shows up higher in search results.
I was going to say, people are so invested right now in Facebook. Who'd want to make the transition over? It seems like it's a lot of work.
I'm not
sure how much more benefit I'm going to get.
Yeah, I have all these DVDs. Why do I want to buy Blu-rays?
Yeah.
Is kind of the way that a lot of people are viewing it as a consumer standpoint, as the end users, the non-social media gurus, people who aren't in the social media club.
Yeah.
And so for those folks right now, Facebook is still kind of the game that they're looking at because it's the devil they know. Google Plus has a lot of features that we didn't really talk about a moment ago, like the video chat on it, Google Hangout. To me, that is the single most compelling element of Google Plus and the one thing that I've used on a semi-regular basis.
Google Hangout meeting.
Yeah, what Hangout is, it's basically allows a group chat with up to 10 people. Mm. So I remember when the internet first started glowing really big and everyone was excited about it. We were all in chat rooms chatting with each other. Well, now we can do that, but we can also do that with video conferencing. And what's cool is it will automatically detect who is speaking and highlight that person in the video chat. So if you have something like iChat on your computer or FaceTime, it works kind of like that, only it's with 10 people over a browser. You guys can share video. And what I've used it for is online film festivals. Independent filmmakers are actually having screenings of their films on YouTube. Mm. People are in these group chats watching them and discussing them as the film is going on with the filmmaker.
Yeah.
So that's really cool and something that Facebook doesn't have right now.
Mm-hmm. Well, Facebook will probably have it in 2 weeks, right?
Right. I'm sure they're working on it already.
Yeah. And so you're still a Facebook person?
Right now, yeah.
And Dustin, you are too?
Yeah, I still am. And in our little debate, once again, they're not mutually exclusive. But, in our discussion with the Social Media Club, it was that you're not going to go away from Facebook. Mm-hmm. It's too big. You're already heavily invested. All of our brands are heavily invested.
Yeah.
Hundreds of thousands of dollars growing their user base. So you're not going to necessarily move away from Facebook, at least in the short term. The question is more now, how much additional money do we have to spend to try and figure out this whole Google Plus thing? And is there enough people there to make a difference? And right now, there's just not.
Let's move on to a different war going on right now. It's the Kindle Fire versus the iPad. If people out there are wondering which one to buy this holiday season, you would suggest what, Justin? Where would you go?
Well, obviously, I'm going to go on iPad. Anyone who's listened to the show more than once knows that that's the camp I'm going to go in.
Yeah.
I will say that the Kindle Fire is probably the first real fantastic competitor on the market.
It's gotten dinged up a little bit the last few days.
Right. It doesn't have – spec-wise, it doesn't match up as well. It's running the Android operating system or version of it, which is a really pretty solid operating system. However, a lot of people look at it and say that the screen is not nearly as responsive from a technical standpoint. Mm-hmm. They're not able to get the same level of interaction with it, and it's not as fast. It's not as speedy. Mm-hmm. I have the Android Market, and I can play Angry Birds, but it doesn't move as smoothly when I'm playing it. It's a great e-reader. And that's an area where I really think that Kindle does beat the iPad. Probably the only area where you'll hear me say that, mm-hmm. is that just as far as reading off of it, it's a joy. But as far as, you know, Kindle Fire versus iPad, I'm still going iPad. It's truly a device that can now with iOS 5 almost replace your laptop. And I can't say that about a Kindle.
But it's also three times as expensive.
Right. But again, if you're paying a lot of money for this device, this is an instance where I feel that it's worth it.
Yeah.
If the only barrier to entry is the price point, then consider what you're getting. You're getting a device that can do virtually anything based on whatever you can find in the App Store, is secure because of the walled garden method that Apple uses.
Yeah.
And I can go on in multiple sales pitches here, but I think at the end of the day, there is a reason why it maybe costs a little bit more, and I think it's for the experience.
Dustin, before you wave in, let's get our listeners to chime in here. Kindle Fire versus the iPad, what do you think? And also, Facebook versus Google Plus, where are you these days? 816-235-2888 is our phone number here, our email address, uptodate@kcur.org, or go to KCUR's Facebook page or tweet us at @KCURUpToDate. Dustin, what do you think about Kindle Fire versus the iPad?
Well, it's a great debate, and I would actually also throw in the mix there the Nook tablet, which is from Barnes & Noble. So kind of the price points, just to kind of throw it out there for comparison. So the Kindle Fire is about $200. The device, the tablet from Barnes & Noble, is a little bit more expensive. It's about $250,
right.
And then the iPad is, you know, starting about $500. So mm-hmm. you can get, you know, at least two of those other devices for the iPad. So I think it boils down to, if you have an existing laptop, you may not need the functionality of an iPad. If you don't, then the iPad, I think, kind of meets multiple needs. It meets the e-reader needs. It meets mobile computing needs. But if you don't need that, if you already have a laptop, whether from home or personal use, you know, for the Android devices, they're coming out with a lot of the same games and general functionality that you can get in the iPad. Now, it's not as shiny. It's not as high quality. It doesn't have the Apple on it.
Mm-hmm.
But if you're looking, you know, for a holiday gift, you know, $500 is quite a bit to spend on one particular device for the holidays. Whereas, you know, $200 seems like a more, you know, reasonable gift for, you know, a significant other or for an adult. Now, when you compare that to, you know, are you going to get, you know, an iPod? You know, iPods are still $200.
Mm-hmm.
So you see a lot of people doing that. If you're trying to compare, you know, should I get an iPad or, you know, a gaming system? I mean, gaming systems are still, you know, $300, you know, price range. So if you're looking for something $200, you have very basic needs, maybe surfing the web a little bit, maybe a little bit of music kind of stuff. That's great. You know, the iPad can do all that. It's a little bit of expensive of a device if all you're going to do is surf the web, you know, here and there and listen to a couple songs.
Mm-hmm.
So as far as the Kindle Fire versus the Barnes & Noble Nook, the Barnes & Noble device actually has quite a bit more power from storage space and some other things. So, you know, if you're looking at those two, I would just say, you know, evaluate them online. There's tons of great resources to do that. I've heard really good things about both. The advantage of Amazon, it's tied into everything Amazon offers.
Yeah, right.
So there's some huge content advantages there. So it just kind of depends on what exactly you're going to use it for.
Well, when it comes to reading, one critic said this: the winner is the Nook tablet over the Kindle Fire. This critic wrote, trade books, mass market books, textbooks, magazines and newspapers, kids' books all look and function better on the Nook tablet than on the Kindle Fire. Very strong opinion.
Yeah. And it's, you know, once again, it's kind of personal preference. You know, Kindle has been out for a while and has the reliability. They have the history. They have a little bit more experience doing that. So the hard part about the Barnes & Noble device is you don't know how long it's going to be out. but because it
meaning,
is meaning you don't know how long they're going to continue to support it. I think Amazon's pretty heavily invested. It's not going to go away. It's tough to tell if you know the Barnes & Noble device will be around for a while.
Mm-hmm. Do you buy that distinction, Justin, between the Nook and the Kindle Fire?
Yeah. And you know, the device that I've played with the Nook more than I have with the Fire. And I do find that it is slightly better device for consuming media. I think when you're asking yourself Nook, Fire, or iPad, I think the primary question is, are you consuming media or are you wanting to consume and create content?
Mm-hmm.
And I think if you're wanting to consume and create, then iPad's the way to go. If you're looking to just consume, then yeah, I definitely think you should look either a Nook or an iPad.
But even creating on the iPad is a challenge for some people. I've read from any number of folks who still say consuming media is great on the iPad, but producing it is a tough thing to do.
In my daily life, and you know, granted,
I might be more unusual compared to anybody else's, Justin.
Well, okay, and looking at the sales ranks for the iPad on Black Friday, Apple sold. If you look at all 360 of their stores, they were selling about an iPad a second during Black Friday.
Jeez.
So if those are the stats that we're looking at, I think that's a great counter argument to people saying, well, I can't create with it, because mm-hmm. folks obviously are finding use for them. They're making huge inroads with enterprise customers and with business travelers, with government. We're setting them up regularly here at UMKC with users.
It's not an easy thing to create on that. I mean, I know it's not hard, but it's not, you know.
I would disagree. There's a bit of a learning curve.
There's a learning curve.
But there's a learning curve with anything that you get. You know, if your main barrier to entry is there's a learning curve, then use your Windows XP machine.
Mm-hmm.
And never buy anything new. You know, to me, that's less of an argument against adopting new technology, because there's always going to be that learning curve.
Well, and some of that may be just going from, you know, from a desktop Windows-based to a Mac-based operating mm-hmm. system as well, because there is quite a bit of a difference there in the functionality. And also with the touchscreen devices, there's a little bit, you know, you have to get used to pinching and, you know, swiping. And once you kind of figure out some of that, you know, they show in the commercials where people are editing movies on their iPad and you can. I don't know anybody that has ever done it.
besides
– I have.
Justin's raising
besides
his hand.
Justin. Yeah. Because, you can do it, but 99.9% of the people aren't going to. But it's there. So
mm-hmm.
if you don't need that level of functionality and don't care if your kids break a $200 device versus a $500 device or mm-hmm. lose it for that matter, you know, the lower-end devices will meet most of the needs. The other thing I'll point out is that there is a screen size difference as well. So the iPad screen is 10 inches. The other devices are usually around 7 inches. So it's a little bit smaller device, a little bit more compact of a device.
Again, if our listeners want to chime in here with our techsperts, Dustin Jacobson, Justin Parlett on the Kindle Fire versus the Nook Reader versus the iPad, 816-235-2888, or email UpToDate at kcur.org, or go to KCUR's Facebook page. We have some readers commenting here. Anne in Kansas City, Missouri asks, is there an educational discount for iPads? Also, does anyone actually use them as phones?
Well, yeah, actually, my mother, who travels all the time, uses an app called Line 2, and that basically allows her to use the iPad as a speakerphone over a VoIP connection. So, yes, people can use them as phones. Are they designed as phones out of the box?
Mm-hmm.
No. And then as far as educational discounts, no, there really aren't discounts available for them that I'm aware of. Sometimes you can catch them on sale at various retailers.
Mm-hmm.
They'll have, like, Black Friday things.
Greg Peters just wrote us this on Twitter. Just bought a Fire for a gift but had to play with it. It rocks, and it's one-third the price of the overpriced Apple technology. There you go.
Yeah, you know, once again, if you don't need the functionality, you are going to overpay. I mean, if you're just listening to a movie and maybe reading a book, it is overkill for that.
Beck from Olathe. Beck, good morning.
Good morning. I'd like them to talk a little bit about the battery life on those three devices, because my iPad battery life in an airport is a fantastic thing. And I'll take my answer off the air.
Thank you, Beth.
They all have pretty good battery life, actually.
Mm-hmm.
I think that you're going to, right now, if I'm not mistaken, Nook is testing slightly better. The last thing I read, and I can't come up with a source, and this is probably Engadget or one of the 18 tech blogs that I read, but they did a side-by-side comparison of all the devices, and I think the Nook are barely edged out Kindle Fire and iPad for battery life.
But Dustin raises a good point about the future of the Nook if Barnes & Noble isn't going to be backing it. That's an interesting point.
Yeah, very true.
Yeah, and I don't have any justification for that. It's just, right. You know, if you look at companies, that's not their core business.
Right.
Creating electronic devices. Any company that's tried something like that, it typically doesn't go real well. But in the case of Amazon, they've sold millions of Kindles. So
Barnes
it's possible.
Barnes & Noble is almost to the point where they're betting the farm on this thing, though. They're putting a lot of money into it.
You walk in the store, there they are selling them. Yep. Russ from Kansas City, Kansas. Good morning. You're on with the Techsperts. Good morning.
Hello there. Yeah, I'm reminded of the old argument you use, Windows or at Mac, because those are all the computers in the world. I don't use an iPad, and I don't use a Kindle. I use an Android tablet. I can make apps for it. Other people can make apps for it because the SDK is widely distributed, and it is generally more functional than a Kindle, although less functional than an iPad. If I care to work at it, it becomes very iPad-like, and a lot of phone apps have relevance in the tablet world, and tablet apps are becoming more and more frequent. It should be discussed.
Russ, thank you.
Yeah, and to clarify, there's two kinds of Kindles. So the old Kindle was very kind of proprietary. You know, it was black and white. It used a different technology. The newer devices are all Android-based, meaning that just like you may have an Android phone, you'll have an Android tablet, meaning that things like Angry Birds that are within the Android marketplace will work across tablets and phones. Mm-hmm. So they're trying to at least standardize on Android and the iOS. So there's really only two platforms anymore for both computers, tablets, and cell phones. I'm kind of discounting BlackBerry. I mean, BlackBerry does still exist, but they don't really – they've tried tablets and just really haven't been real successful.
We go to Greg from KCK. Greg, good morning.
Good morning. I just wanted to ask the guys about, yeah, I have an iPad too, and I really like it. But, I run into a lot of problems with, you know, the Adobe Flash, how, you know, the iPad 2 doesn't support Adobe Flash, and there's a lot of websites that, you know, I'm not able to use. And I know they were talking, you know, they've been talking about how they're moving away from Adobe Flash, but I was just wanting to know if those guys, your techs, know, you know, how long and how, you know, when do you think that would ever, you know, when I could ever use my iPad for some of these websites?
Yeah, and Adobe has actually come out and said that they're discontinuing support of Flash, and that's kind of, you know, for the Apple fans out there, it's kind of I told you so, we won, because in essence they did. Apple said that they weren't going to support Flash; they're going to support newer technologies like HTML5, and they won. So good for them. So everyone's kind of moving away from Flash. But in the interim, there's definitely some challenges there in order to consume content that's Flash-based. A lot of the video content out there is Flash-based. YouTube has tried to render it because the Android operating system, they've tried to allow most videos to be played on HTML5 or non-Flash devices. Not everything's there, but for the most part, everyone's trying to figure that challenge out, because mobile is growing so fast, and tablets as well, that they know they have to support that. The stats that I've seen is that by 2014 or so, around a third of all internet connected users will have either a tablet, and that it's not going to support Flash. So they have to figure out something for retailers, for consumers, so that you can get away without Flash.
Well, if you're just joining us this morning, you're listening to Up to Date on KCUR. We're talking with our Techsperts, Dustin Jacobson, Justin Parlett. Gentlemen, let's move on to the future of computing. The New York Times is currently involved in an absolutely fascinating project that predicts the future of computing. It asks readers and experts to take part, and some of the forecasts are just downright fascinating. Here's one for the year 2021, simulated actors. And they say all new movies are digitally created. Realistic simulated action becomes much cheaper to create and easier to control than filming live. And I read that and I thought, you know, Justin, that just might make sense. You could maybe just see it.
Well, given some of the performances we've seen this year, I think we could definitely probably get something better out of digital, folks. And I do know that there's a big campaign right now to get Andy Serkis an Oscar nomination for his motion capture role in Rise of the Planet of the Apes.
Mm-hmm.
So I think we're already bridging that gap over the uncanny valley into a world where we'll be more accepting of digital performers.
Yeah.
It's I think we're well on route there, maybe even before 2021.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I'm excited too because the technology is advanced. You know, what's real and not real anymore is difficult to determine. I was reading an article earlier this morning around how they've been able to make robots so lifelike. It's in some cases difficult to even tell them apart. So even though it may be real in a movie and not CGI, it's a robot. So I think they're getting there in another few years. I think they're going to be there. And the question is going to be, you know, do I want to pay, you know, the stuntman to go and, you know, jump off a cliff, or am I just going to pay a robot and it's going to crash and I spend, you know, whatever money it is to repair it. And if it crashes, it crashes, but no harm, no foul.
Well,
so
there's just a whole cottage industry in the tech world built around the idea of what's the future going to hold, right? I mean, that's the whole idea of technology.
Right.
It's the two go hand in hand, don't
they?
Yeah,
lots of futurists are employed. Folks like the fictional Tony Stark from Iron Man who sit there and dream up what tomorrow is going to bring us. And what's funny is a lot of times they're right, but they might be off by a decade or two.
Yeah.
A lot of people called Steve Jobs a futurist. In the 80s, he was talking about in shareholder meetings with Apple, he was talking about having a computer that was able to fit in your pocket and carry your entire digital lifestyle.
Mm-hmm.
And this is something that was discussed in the 80s by folks that, you know, 20 years later, actually brought that device to market. So there's a place for it. And some of these things that we're seeing now are definitely going to manifest.
Here's another forecast. From the year 2029, robot wars, the first war fought primarily with robots, commences. And you're sort of saying that might make sense given what you said about stuntmen.
Well, and even with the recent some of the recent conflicts, you see the use of drones. There was a story on NPR the other day around how
we lost one.
They're training. Well, there's that one too. But they're training. There's this big controversy around pilots. I don't know if you guys heard that story, but it was the controversy is that they're training people that aren't officially pilots, but they're classifying them as pilots, the people that are controlling the drones. And there's kind of this uproar within the traditional pilot community of someone that, you know, is flying an F-18 versus someone that's essentially, you know, sitting behind a cockpit who knows where and controlling this drone. And there's kind of this ego battle of, well, they're not a real pilot because they're not actually sitting in a cockpit, you know, at 30,000 feet. But it was interesting because a lot of the pilots that have that experience are the ones that are training the next generation of pilots, which is the drone pilots. So they're, you know, there's this interesting conflict of they know that they need to understand drones because that's where kind of the world is heading. So I think that prediction is realistic. I think that we're getting there. It's lower cost. There's less human casualties. There's a lot of things at stake there.
Here's some other ones from the New York Times site. By the year 2017, voting for president by telephone. By 2023, brain-powered prosthesis. Prosthetic limbs that are controlled by a brain-computer interface will be commercially available initially for the handicapped, but later for able-bodied persons. By the year 2085, I love this, cash is outlawed. By 2093, bicentennial man. Medical advances will permit the first human to live for a period of 200 years or more, and that's certainly something that Glenn McGee from the Center for Practical Bioethics here in town has talked about on this program as well.
It sounds so boring.
Yeah.
What are you going to do?
Well, you know,
I'd do a lot.
One of the ones that I thought was interesting was in 2031, there's this concept of full life recording where everything will be recorded from start to finish in audio
everything
and video.
You do.
Yeah, everything you do.
That's interesting.
But if you think about where Facebook is now, I mean, Facebook, you know, is approaching that. You know, it's manual, but, you know, with the launch of their timeline feature, which, you know, is something I'm sure that, you know, we talked about a little bit in the past and continue to talk about. But their idea there is that you will upload pictures from when you were born.
Mm-hmm.
And you'll continue to kind of go in reverse to add historical content, go back and add, you know, like I'd go back and add, you know, pictures when we got married and, you know, whatever. So it's interesting that they're saying that's still 20 years away when I think that we're getting – I think that's going to actually happen sooner rather than later.
Yeah. I'm going to catch a couple more topics here before a break. Firefox, there's some new thinking out there that Firefox's market share is fading. The browser itself isn't that good anymore, and its money supply may be drying up. Is Firefox coming to the end of the road? And this is a big deal for a guy like me who lives on Firefox. Justin?
I don't know if it's end of the road, but it's definitely not the powerhouse that it once was.
What happened?
Well, I think they maybe grew too large, got too big for their britches. I think that one – and they're
like
also
you.
I'm losing weight, darn it. No, I think
not your weight, your head.
Oh, okay. Well, all this Apple talk. No, I think the big problem that Firefox has is that they have rapidly adopted the open source model,
mm-hmm.
To the point where they are constantly putting out new iterations of Firefox.
You know,
it seems like every time you launch the darn thing, it wants you to update it. Whereas you have Google Chrome, which is gaining market share, which updates kind of quietly in the background and obtrusively,
mm-hmm.
does its own little thing, but still has all of the features that Firefox enjoys,
mm-hmm.
But also is possibly a little bit more secure as well. Firefox, it seems like we're constantly reading stories about how there are ways for people to sniff out the cookies that you're sending to various websites and see what you're typing and what your passwords are. So I think it's really just a matter of it was a great model, but it really led the way for browsers like Chrome.
How about Apple TV? One analyst is saying that the long-rumored Apple TV will cost twice as much as competing TVs when it comes out next year. Do you buy that, and is it going to be worth it?
You know, I have the Apple TV as it currently stands, that $100 device that's a little bit bigger than a cell phone.
And it does what, just for those who don't know?
For those that haven't seen it or heard about it, it essentially allows me to take all the online content and render it on my TV. So I can connect to iTunes to watch movies that I can rent or buy. I can connect to Netflix, which is where I use it 95% of the time to stream movies. So it allows you to basically bridge that connection from your cable to online content, mm-hmm. and mm-hmm. put it on your TV. So what they're talking about
is actually coming out with TVs,
an integrated,
right,
an actual TV.
Yeah.
And they're saying people don't like having a separate device. Well, the separate device is only $100. They're saying that, you know, if you were to pay $800 for a TV, if you were to get a similar TV, it's going to cost $1,600 from Apple. So the question is, are people going to pay the premium to have a true Apple TV? Mm. The Apple Cinema displays and some of the very high-end large screen monitors that they have now are phenomenal, but they're insanely expensive.
Yeah.
Prohibitively so. I think for me, it's difficult at this point to even saying Apple hasn't even acknowledged they're working on this device. So until that comes out, I know in the Isaacson biography, Steve Jobs says, "Oh, I cracked TV," but until it actually comes out, I think it's very early in the game to be talking about price points for it.
Yeah.
But needless to say, it's an Apple product, so yeah, it's going to be expensive.
Let's take a break. When we come back, our tech experts will share their holiday gift-giving guide when it comes to high-tech products for you and yours. I'm Steve Kraske of the Kansas City Star, and you're listening to Up to Date on KCUR. And welcome back. I'm Steve Kraske. If you missed yesterday's important conversation about suicide, you'll find it in all of our older broadcasts at kcur.org. Tomorrow, author William Least Heat Moon joins us on the 20th anniversary of his book, Prairie Earth. Also, Brian McTavish returns with our weekend to-do list. Tomorrow's show is one I've been looking forward to for quite a while. At this hour, we're visiting with our tech experts, Dustin Jacobson, Vice President of Social Media and Technology at Barclay. Justin Parlett is Support Systems Administrator here at UMKC. Let's turn to a holiday high-tech gift-giving guide here. And by all means, if our listeners want to chime in with their ideas for things they're considering as good holiday gifts and of the high-tech variety, we'd like to hear from you. 816-235-2888 or email UpToDate at kcur.org or tweet us at kcurUpToDate. Well, Justin, you're out. Your first one up here is the iThunder missile launcher.
That's right.
Is this like a toy missile launcher? Or are we really talking about
No, it's
doing
not, Stephen. I'm marketing
here.
Weapons to your listeners. No, this is actually an office toy, or maybe just, you know, around the house, wherever you need to launch little foam missiles at people. But what makes it fun is that you can actually set this missile launcher up wherever you want in the room, and it connects via Bluetooth to your iOS device, so your iPhone or your iPod Touch or your iPad, and then you can use that to launch missiles at your frenemies.
Frenemies.
Do you have one of these?
Well, I mean, my office mate, he's a great guy, but it's just fun to chuck stuff at him,
yeah.
Right? So definitely looking at getting one of these. And
shooting distance of around 25 feet, I understand.
Yes, which is far longer than I'll need it for, but I just think that gives the potential to leave a welt a little bit greater. But it's got a 270-degree horizontal rotation. It can fire four missiles. It has kind of like a Gatling fashion. And in case you lose some, it comes with a couple of extras. It's got a remote that isn't an iPad, so if you don't have one of those, you can still use it.
But that just sounds so much like you, Justin. That just sounds great. Dustin, what do you got there?
Well, you know, for the ultimate geek,
not that anyone here at this table would qualify for that.
Certainly not.
There's one of my favorite sites, and I know that some of the items that Justin referenced are from this site as well. And it's a site called ThinkGeek, and it's a great site. You know, they have stuff that only true geeks and or nerds would understand. And one of my favorite items from them. It's actually a T-shirt that you can play. Now, you may have seen something similar in an Old Navy commercial, but it's actually it's a T-shirt that has electronics integrated into it, which I think is pretty cool. It's $20, so it's not gonna.
And you can do what with this T-shirt?
You can actually play it and connect it to an amplifier, and it's got a guitar, kind of what looks like a picture of a guitar, and you can actually physically play
it. And for $20, this is going to work?
Yeah. Well, and there's a lot of really kind of fun, gimmicky stuff on ThinkGeek where it's in that, you know, kind of $20 price range where you're not going to break the bank. If you wash it once and it doesn't work, you're like, it was still funny. It's more about the experience and the response that you get. But they have, you know, some really cool stuff like, you know, for your ultimate, comic fan, they have like an Iron Man costume hoodie. So it's like a hooded sweatshirt, but it looks like a costume. They've got lots of different versions like that. Like they've got a Stormtrooper one it's a sweatshirt, but it kind of looks like a Stormtrooper. So,
speaking of fancy T-shirts, you sent me a link for one. It's called the Wipe T-shirt, and this is for $89. And it says, stop using the sleeve of your dusty sweatshirt to wipe your devices. This tee's design incorporates a built-in microfiber of a cloth for scratchless device cleaning.
Well, everywhere you turn, you have some kind of a screen that needs cleaning. So this just makes it convenient.
T-shirt.
Right.
Yeah.
So it makes it convenient. So, you know, with the only thing it doesn't have is some kind of a disinfectant. Because if you think about how you're handling all these devices, you know, my computer screen, my iPad and phone screen, you know, they are carrying lots of germs. So the only thing that's missing is some kind of germ spray integration.
For $89, you ought to have that thrown in, it would seem to me. Justin, you're up with the MacBook Air.
Yeah, I mean, I figured one of the things I should put on here is actually a computer. And there's a new class of computers out that everybody's talking about. They're talking about the Ultrabooks. And the Ultrabooks are basically kind of what's going to be replacing laptops here in the next couple of years. And when the MacBook Air first came out, it was early on in our tenure on the show. And we were talking about what this device was going to do. And I said, I think the MacBook Air is where computers are going. And as we see the Ultrabook line come out from Dell, from Acer, from all the manufacturers, they're all bringing these ultra-thin, really compact, very tiny computers. But
they
still
have
full
keyboards?
They still have full keyboards. Mm-hmm. They still have full-size screens, 13-inch or 11-inch. So they're still full-sized. But they're incredibly thin, and MacBook Air being the originator of that is still kind of the granddaddy of them all.
Why is this the future of computing?
Well, because we are moving towards things that are just smaller and smaller.
Thin and light.
As we look at technology, everything just gets smaller and smaller as we move along. Eventually, we're going to have cell phones in our teeth. Right now, though, we're still at the point where we have to have it outside of our body. So for things like laptops or portable computers, as I prefer to call them, we have things like the Ultrabook, which are – incredibly thin, usually under a pound. They're not going to have a tremendous amount of memory. You know, you're looking at maybe 250 gigs of storage. So it's not going to be something that you store your entire media library on. But you are going to be able to instantly close it, throw it in your bag, and forget about it because there are no moving parts inside. Mm. So the big failure points for your laptops are hard drives because they have movable parts. And as we carry our portable computers around, they're always getting jostled. This solves that problem. You're not going to see as many hard drive failures in portables now. So if you're looking for someone who needs a new computer, they start out at $999 and they go, you know, they get really expensive. But if you're looking at specs and reliability and performance right now, I think it's hard to argue that the MacBook Air is not the king of that heap. Price-wise, no, it gets its butt kicked in price-wise. But as far as specs and performance and just being kind of the leader of that category, that's where you go.
We're talking about high-tech gift giving. We want to know what you're going to be giving this holiday season when it comes to a high-tech gift. 816-235-2888, our email, update@kcur.org. Well, Dustin, what else?
So for me, I'm more of a accessories kind of guy. And when I think about easy gifts, things that people can use, I'll always be sure to save the receipt, of course. But I look at things where you can replace kind of standard equipment. And for me, a big area is headphones. So most of the headphones, I know Justin had some of these on his list as well. And for me, you know, when you look at the ones that come, they're usually pretty bad. And, you know, it's like $4 that they just happened to throw into the box for free.
Right.
It didn't really cost them anything. So depending upon the device that they have, I am impressed that they are now advertising, I think it's Verizon, that has high-end headphones now that are actually coming with the cell phones, which is great. But for me, it comes down to quality headphones. And depending upon your price range, there's tons of different variations out there. But one gift I think that everybody can use is upgraded headphones. Now, for
That's
me,
a great idea. Is there really that much of a difference in the headphones I have with my iPod, which again came in the box?
Came with the device.
They've always struck me as not too bad. I mean, they're very, you know, but you're wincing.
So for me, that was one of the first things that I did. Now, I have two different sets of headphones. One thing I will call out that I actually have the sound isolating headphones, which I prefer to run with, which is really in violation of all safety best practices.
Yeah, right.
But I enjoy that because I want to focus on that. I don't want to focus on everything around
the car behind you.
The car behind me that's honking when I'm crossing the road.
Yeah.
I've only had a few close calls. But I would say headphones are great. Now, there are headphones in every price range. To get real quality headphones that you're going to have a good bass on that aren't over-the-ear headphones, you're going to probably spend $100. So there's something you don't want to lose. And I've had some great ones that go up to about $200, depending upon your price range.
And the difference, the extra money's worth it.
The extra money to me is worth it. If you're spending hours listening to this, to music and stuff, and you have $5 headphones, you're not going to get great quality music.
Mm-hmm. Well, okay. That's sage advice from Mr. Dustin there, laying it down. Justin, well, you want to talk about the Kirkland robot tea infuser and drip tray.
Yeah, this is just a ridiculous stocking
Note
stuffer.
The difference in gift suggestions.
Yeah. Right, right.
Experts. Yeah.
Well, I've gotten into drinking tea, right? And loose leaf tea is just fantastic. And I think it's something that if you drink tea, you owe it to yourself to do something like that. But I also think that you should, if you're a tech geek, have a tiny little tea infuser that's shaped like a robot that looks like he's trying to get out of your tea. It's fantastic. I'll throw a link up to it on Twitter and we can post that out. It's $10 and it's a wonderfully geeky little techie present that would be great as a stocking stuffer.
Okay. Good idea. Dustin?
All right. So my next one is a little bit more pricey. It's in the, $200 range. But it's a Bluetooth powered speaker. It's called the Jambox. The thing I like about this is that, most of the speakers that come with your devices, because everyone's getting all these devices, whether it's an iPod, an iPad, or a cell phone, whatever it is, and the speakers aren't just that good. So similar to headphones, I'm a big sound music guy. $200, it's going to greatly increase the quality of music. It's not you know, it's not a Bose system. It's not, you know, something like that. But it's small. It's about the same size as a cell phone, and it has great, great sound quality. You can buy it. There's a lot of different places that it retails, but it's $200, and you're going to use, you know, Pandora, Spotify, all those music services much, much more if you can listen to it at a quality.
There was one that you recommended to me last night, Dustin, on one of the links you sent me. It's called the Jawbone Up. Wear this wristband and the accompanying app will track your activity, sleep, and nutritional health. I wonder how accurate that is.
Yeah. So if you think about the pedometers, the old school pedometers, if you think about Nike Plus was where you had the you know, the little kind of quarter size device that you put in your either special shoes or you could get an adapter. And I thought those were great because what it did – now I was kind of spoiled because I also had a Garmin GPS watch. So I kind of I used it to see how accurate it was. It wasn't obviously as accurate as a GPS watch, my Garmin watch, but it's pretty good. And the reason that I like those is because it's a great device to kind of help you track your health.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and we're coming in the new year and everyone has New Year's resolutions that are, you know, I'm going to sleep more and eat healthy and exercise more. We know that doesn't really happen in reality, let's all be honest. But any of these little devices can kind of help keep you motivated and help keep you honest. This device is about $100. So it's not free, but it's, you know, if you think about your health and investing in that, it's I would definitely look at some of these health-related devices to help you track your activity.
And for those of you who think that your tech doesn't always have to be computer-driven, Justin has one, the Mighty Thor ice scraper.
That's right. This is a high-tech ice scraper. It doesn't heat or anything, but the way that it's designed by an engineer to be the most efficient ice scraper ever. And
really?
As winter is coming, we want to be as prepared as possible for that. And I think this is the mighty Mjolnir of ice scapers.
What does it do that my ice scraper doesn't do?
First of all, let's this is something we're going to have to
show.
But the thing that
it looks like an
most,
ice scraper.
The thing it does. It does. But the thing that I hate most about scraping ice is that when I'm doing it, I get ice all over me. You know, I'm wearing an ice jacket, and now my sleeves
maybe
are soaked.
Bluer.
Yeah, possibly.
And
maybe,
so
maybe some,
this does what?
Felt. What this does is this actually allows you to scrape the ice without it bouncing back on you. It's got an adjustable handle, so it can grow in size. And then the way that it's designed, it's got a handle on the back, so you can actually grab it if you need to get some better leverage. Or you can just use it with the two hands on the handle and scrape away.
And where'd you come up with this, dare I ask?
Quirky.com.
Quirky.com.
Yeah. Oddly enough,
that is
right?
That is an actual.
Seriously, Quirky.com.
Yeah,
I thought you were kidding.
No, I'm not. That's
Quirky.com.
That's the name of it. And the nice thing is, you also, because it's got a double blade design, you can scrape with both forward and back motion. So
yeah,
I think it's applying design principles to an ice scraper, which is something that every winter we frantically run to True Value for because we've lost the one from last year,
yes,
or we broke it because it was too flimsy. And if we have Thor on our side, we'll be fine. Also, I just really like the name.
Yes.
And it's only $20.
Yeah, it's
just
$20.
Ask it. $20.
Yeah. $20.
You won't lose that ice scraper if you're spending $20 for it.
No.
Okay.
But it'll work.
Justin, you also have the iPad Arcade Cabinet.
Yes, this is something that came out last year, but I felt it was horrendously overpriced last year. Well, now it's been marked down. But what it is you stick your iPad in this little cabinet that looks like an old Atari arcade.
Mm-hmm.
And it connects via Bluetooth, and then you can play all of your old classic Atari games. It's a wonderful piece of nostalgia. You can finally beat your old high score at Asteroids without actually having to go to an arcade or pay a ridiculous amount of money for it. But it's got the little joystick. It's got the buttons. It's made of wood. I mean, it feels like you're actually playing an arcade. A buddy of mine has this, and I laughed at it last year when I saw it on the internet. But after using it, now that it's been marked down, I totally want one. I think it'd be a great gift to give to the geek in your family, even if they're a casual video gamer. And I don't play any games since Asteroids, or, you know, I played Minesweeper. You know, this is perfect for them.
We're talking about some great holiday gift-giving ideas with our techsperts, Dustin Jacobson and Justin Parlett. Dustin, how about the X3D glasses? $35 to watch, I guess, 3D programming, right?
Well, it's to watch them in style.
Style.
Because, you know, every nerd out there wants to watch his 3D in style. So,
we do.
It's kind of a fun, you know, it's one of those things. It's like, are you really going to use it Maybe not. I mean, 3D TVs are still relatively expensive. But I thought it was more, you know, it's – and you'll probably see people wearing these on the street and be like, why are they wearing 3D glasses on the street? But it's – you know, right now when you think about 3D movies, you've got these really dorky looking glasses. So it's to watch your 3D movies in style at home on your couch.
What else do you have on your list here?
So one kind of last thing that I thought I would share is and kind of my gadget of the month is the it's a camera, but it's a great camera. It's called the GoPro Hero HD. And a friend of mine, I'd seen it before, and a friend of mine was over last week, and he was talking about this, and it's a camera that's built for activities. So the, you know, skydiving and surfing, it's weatherproof, so you can take it with you underwater. And it shoots at 60 frames per second. So it shoots high definition.
Wow.
You know, it's amazing device.
It's a neat idea.
And it's $300. So it's not super expensive. I mean, most digital cameras now are in the $100, $150 price range. But this shoots HD. It's a pretty solid device for $300. And you can get all kinds of accessories to attach it to your bike or your kite or wherever.
You know, it just strikes me listening to you guys talk about all these ideas that, you know, for the average person out there trying to keep up with what's even available these days, you got to spend some time looking around because there's all kinds of stuff out there.
Well, you could spend time looking around, or you could just tune into the text booths when we appear.
Where is a good place to go, a good digest, a place to visit here?
I really like Engadget. I think they're fantastic. Gizmodo is also really good, and TechCrunch is also a nice blog. Between those three, I think you can stay pretty well informed.
Sort of like Nestle's Crunch.
Yeah. Well, and all the major technology websites out there put out holiday gift guides, so keep an eye out. And it's a great place to get some ideas for start looking.
Those are our techsperts, Justin Parlett, Dustin Jacobson. Gentlemen, thank you all so much for your good ideas here. You can find their holiday gift giving guide on our website at kcur.org. You can also find more information about our guest program schedules and podcasts. Again, it's all at kcur.org. Be with us tomorrow when we talk with author William Least Heatmoon on the 20th anniversary of his book, Prairie Earth. We had help today from KCUR's Danny Alexander, Luke Martin, Kim Noble, and Maria Carter. The show is produced by Steven Steigman. I'm Steve Kraske of the Kansas City Star, and you are up to date.